Hi there. Super quickly, before we jump into this next episode of the Dog Sports Decoded podcast, I wanted to take a quick minute and introduce you to this new series, of which this podcast episode is the first. So in this episode and series of episodes, we are going to be covering different rule books for the various dog sports, and we're calling it Fumbling Through the Rule Book. So some of these sports I'm familiar with, some I'm less familiar with, probably some I've never seen before, but we're going to go through a couple of these different rule books and sports and try and go over some of the common questions people might have. So this could be over sort of definition glossary terms, or it could be specific rules, but we're going to cover sort of just common questions people might have if they're jumping into this sport for the first time or ready to compete for the first time. So in this episode, we are going to be covering Barn Hunt, and I think this one will be broken up into a few different episodes, but in this episode we are speaking with Monica Hoyer, who is a Barn Hunt instructor, but that being said, she is not a representative for the Barn Hunt Association. So as we discuss these things, this is our interpretation of them. This is not the official association interpretation of them. So that goes for Barn Hunt as well as any of the other sports covered in this series. This is meant to be helpful, but please do not take our final word as law. Ultimately, it is up to each association to set their rules and explain their rules. So this is purely our interpretation of those rules. So please do your own homework. And if there is some clarity that comes out about a rule that contradicts us, please do take the association's word for it, not ours. With that, let's dive into the episode. So hi, and welcome to the Dog Sports Decoded podcast. My name is Megan Ritchie, and today I'm joined by Monica Hoyer, who is a Barn Hunt trainer, instructor, and has attended a couple of Barn Hunt judges workshops.
One judge workshop.
All right. Yeah. And today we're going to walk through the June 21st, 2019 Barn Hunt competitor rulebook and try and walk you through a few different kind of question areas, problem areas that people typically have.
Yeah.
So thanks to Monica for joining us, and I guess we'll dive right in.
Sounds good. Okay, so today we're going to be reviewing the Barn Hunt Association official competitor rulebook. So the Barn Hunt Association has three rule books, one for judges, one for clubs, and one for competitors. It's 26 pages, so
it's not bad to read.
You know what, that includes the cover and the table of contents.
Yeah.
So it's actually a pretty easy read, but we're going to go through and talk about some of the less clear language and some of the more situational nuances of the rules. So we're going to skip straight to part three, which has some definitions of some words for Barn Hunt. The first definition we can talk about is what the blind is. So for people who are brand new to the sport, the blind is the area where you sit while your rats are being hidden so that you don't know and nobody can tell you where your rats are going to be. And there's going to be anywhere from 3 to 5 of you
kind of sitting like
space.
This.
Yeah, exactly like this.
Yeah.
Except your dogs are on leash.
Yeah.
And you're following a specific set of rules. So when people say go to the blind or load the blind or the blind is loaded, what they mean is go sit in the tent. The tent is full of all of the people who need to be in the tent.
Yeah. In your
last dog in the blind is what they yell when the last dog is leaving the blind, so that the judge knows that it's going to be a new blind, because the blind is not just a physical space, it is also the group of people who are running with those specific hides.
Yeah, I wonder if we should expand on that. You're talking about the last dog in the blind, so if the blind has 5 dogs in it, those 5 dogs, depending on the level, let's say novice, they're all hidden, the rats are all hidden in the same spot.
Yes.
So that's why they have to be in the blind together, so nobody knows where the rats are.
Yeah. Yeah. And that just prevents you from having to hide the rat in a new place for every single competitor.
Yeah.
So they put you in groups of 5.
Yeah.
And then all 5 of you in your little group, that's your blind. and you would be called like blind one, blind two, blind three. That's where your run order's listed.
Yeah.
So you'll see a heading, it'll say blind one, and it'll say like, you know, Becky and Fluffy.
Yeah.
You know, so Becky and Fluffy know that they're in blind one, and then it'll be listed five dogs, five handlers, and then they'll be in an order, and that's the order they'll get called into the ring. And then the blind will switch when the blind is empty.
Yeah.
They'll call blind two, and that's where you have your blind steward, which is the person who's in charge of telling you to get into the blind and to get out of the blind.
Yeah.
So the blind is a space, but it is also your running order.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Perfect. Yep.
All right. Moving on.
And we want to load the blind as quickly as you can when you're waiting, just so the trial can move a little faster. So that's kind of one of the reasons you're grouped too.
So if you have a really good blind steward, they're
a little militant.
They are.
They're loud.
Loud. I often volunteer to yell. Volunteer to yell. That's a blind steward has to be loud.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be heard across the parking lot, and
you do.
Yeah.
You do. And they also have the authority to tell you you are no longer in blind one because you were too slow.
Yes.
So you have been moved to blind three.
Yeah.
And come back and try again. Right? And that's just to keep things moving. So that's what a blind is. It is both a structure and your running order.
Yeah.
That's what they mean by blind. Okay. This one can be confusing for people. So there's an event versus a trial. And we tend to casually refer to an event as a trial.
Yeah, that's true.
So the event is the whole barn hunt weekend. So say barn hunt is running Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's the event. And then there are trials on each event day.
Right.
So there might be trial one, trial two on Friday.
Yeah.
So Friday morning is trial one, Friday afternoon is trial two. And then the next day, trial three and trial four is still part of the same event, but you know,
a separate trial, so you can repeat the same classes.
Yeah,
within a day.
Because you can only run your dog in the class once per trial.
Yeah.
But
potentially say
six times
trials
event.
Over an event. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So the event is referring to the weekend. Casually, we call the weekend, are you going to the barn hunt trial?
Yeah.
But it's actually, are you going to the barn hunt trials?
Yes.
Or are you going to the barn hunt event? So the event is over the whole weekend, and trials are over, are like sections of the event.
Yeah.
And the reason that's important is because of move ups and lateral moves. So for example, you can move up during an event. So if your dog passes novice, you can move up from novice A to open A.
There's a bug on my hat.
You can move up from novice A to open A, but you can't move down over an event. So if I am finishing my master and I want to go back and play senior B once I'm done my master title, I can't do that in the same event.
I didn't know that.
No, you got to play at your level or higher, or at your level or equivalent. So I could move from master A to master B, or I could move from senior to master, or I could move from senior A to senior B, but I can't go from master A to senior B because you can't move down during an event. You can move across during an event, or you can move up during an event, but you can't move backwards. You have to make the decision as to whether or not you're gonna be, you know, sticking with B or moving on with the A stream. So,
and that's per event?
Per event, yeah. You can change your mind like 2 weeks later, you go to a new event. Absolutely, you can compete at Master two events ago and then go, okay, now I wanna play senior again.
Okay.
Because you're done with master, or your dog's confidence is dropped or something, and you want to move back down a level, you can do that. That's what the B classes are for.
Yeah.
You just can't bounce around
within
in an event.
An event.
Okay. Yeah. That's why there's kind of this important difference between event and trial. And then there's a fun test. A fun test is a licensed event by Barn Hunt Association, but you don't actually earn legs towards anything. So they're for fun. There may or may not be prizes. They are sanctioned by Barn Hunt. And they're official barn hunt events, but they are not titling events. So you can't, it doesn't matter if you earn 100 novice legs at a fun test, you're not going to get your novice title.
Yeah.
You know, none of that goes on record. It's all off the books. Those are done for new clubs. More often than not, they're done to kind of introduce barn hunt to a space, like to a geographic area. And they're done to help new judges, who are in, you know, like judges in training.
Yeah. Get the experience.
Do events and secretaries who are in training do events and things like that. So that's what a fun test is. So yes, it's a barn hunt event, but understand that your legs that you qualify for will not actually go on your dog's record if you play that game.
So it's just for fun, just for practice to introduce your dog, and a good way to, I don't know if you have like show pen nerves, this can be a good way to work through it as well, because you don't have the same pressure on you. Some of the rules are a little bit like you're allowed to bring in treats at the judge's option.
At the club's discretion, you can train in the ring, you're allowed to run in different levels than, like, maybe your dog has two legs in novice and you want to practice open in a trial environment before the next trial because you might be moving up. A fun test is a great place to do that. So fun tests are good. Trial grounds refers to like a specified geographical area where the trial is being handled. And the reason it's important to know what trial grounds are is because if you break a rule on trials grounds, you can be excused from the event. And the grounds may end at the end of the parking lot, or they may go all the way to like the next field or whatever. And it's important because you're not allowed to have certain types of collars on trial grounds.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have certain types of leashes on trial grounds. If your dog is off leash on trial grounds, that's a big no-no. So things like that. So it's important to know where the line is. A lot of the barn hunt trials here aren't combined with any other events. So it's not such a big deal, but when you're attending a barn hunt where, say it's an AKC show and there's also a barn hunt happening, there actually needs to be a line where AKC rules apply on that side of the line and Barn Hunt Association rules apply on this side of the line. Because there's differences in what's allowed. Registering your dog, we can briefly talk about that.
Yep.
A dog can be registered at any age, but they have to be over 6 months to compete.
Okay.
And that includes fun tests. So you can't bring your 4-month-old dog to a fun test because it's still a sanctioned barn hunt event, and therefore your dog cannot compete in a sanctioned barn hunt event, even if it's not for titling legs. But you can register them whenever you like. If barn hunt is your passion and your dog is going to play barn hunt no matter what, register them at 8 weeks. It's fine. Who cares? It's a one-time fee. You only pay it once in the lifetime.
We'll wait for a deal.
It's in US dollars. Sometimes they go on sale.
Yeah.
So there's that. Height divisions, small, medium, and large. Startling to some people, like what these mean. Small are dogs 13 inches exactly or less. Okay. Medium is 13.1 inches. So if your dog is just a smidgen over 13 inches, they're a medium.
Yeah.
Up to 18. And that's up to but not including 18. Large is 18 inches and higher. Anyway, so if your dog is 18 inches exactly or taller, they're a large. And if they are exactly 13 inches or shorter, they're small. And if they're less than 18 but more than 13, they're medium.
And that's at the withers?
At the withers, which is like the shoulder blade. So you just, and there's no measuring, like there's no official measuring unless somebody like questions
and I think
your dog's height. And I think the judge has to question it.
I don't know if we'll get to it, but the dogs usually run all together. So it's not like you're grouped out in the blind by size, but you are ranked that way when you get your placements.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's got nothing, like they're not going to hide things differently. They're not going to change the size of the tunnel or the height of the bales or anything like that. You get all the same amount of time. It's just for in the A stream, so novice A, open A, senior A, master A, you are placed by size. So first through fourth small, first through fourth medium, first through fourth large, and then of all of those dogs, high in trial is the fastest overall.
Right.
So it's just a placement thing. After the B levels, height doesn't matter because placements are not done by height. Mm-hmm. So I think the initial thought was that they just wanted to even the playing field. Shorter dogs may take longer to clear a course because it's harder for them to jump on the bales. Maybe they need to go to the ramp and climb a little bit slower. Larger dogs have a reputation of generally being faster because they can, you know, get up on top of things. The opposite's true. Smaller dogs can get through those tunnels faster. Larger dogs have to crawl a little bit, so it slows them down. That being said, my border collies have been repeatedly defeated by miniature dash hounds for high in class, with zero shame, because those dogs run beautiful runs and they clear the course methodically, and my border collies are ping-ponging off the walls.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to be faster because they cover the course methodically and thoroughly. So at the end of the day, really, the height divisions seemed important, I think, early on, but I think now that the sport has evolved, a lot of people understand that the height divisions actually don't matter, because a 12-inch dog can easily beat my 20-inch dog, no problem. I guess we can talk about day of show entries, because I have seen some questions on some of the Barn Hunt Facebook groups about these. So depending on where you are, Barn Hunt's either like a very available sport, something every weekend, or it's like once a year, depending on how established the sport is in your area. When it's a once a year kind of thing, everybody's entering. And they are entering at midnight, the second the show opens, and it's really hard to get in. Other places, entries are a little bit slower. Maybe they've got two rings and two judges going so they can have more people attend. You could potentially show up in the morning and say, hey, I'd like to run my dog. And they would say, okay, that'll be $30, and they'll enter you. That's a day of show entry. Clubs can choose whether or not they want to allow those.
Certainly if the entries fill early, they won't be allowing them because the trial's full.
And so that's the thing. Just because a day of show entry, like, it, just because it says on the premium that a day of show entry is available, you could show up and there might be three runs available and you're the fourth person in line. And if that happens and you drove 3 hours to get there, and then unfortunately you can't enter, and there's nothing the club can do about that. There are rules about how many runs a judge is allowed to judge. They cannot judge for more than 8 hours a day. It's against the rules. So if there's no more runs, there's no more runs, and it's not, the club is not,
they're not being mean, they're not deliberately turning you away, they just can't.
They would love to take your entry fees and have you run at their trial, but they just can't. So I generally recommend entering during the early entry period.
And you save money that way as well. I don't know what the difference is, $5 or $10 cheaper to pre-enter than day of enter.
Or late entry. Like there are some clubs who just close entries and say, no, we don't do day of and we don't do late. Or they may do day of, but they might not do late. So there's usually like a period, a dead period between when entries close for an event and the day of the event. And that period would be called a late entry. And a club is welcome to choose to accept late entries or not. I personally, when I'm secretary, I tend not to accept late entries, but I will accept day of entries.
And I guess just for the, I assume mostly for the administration side, you have your entry deadline, and then at that point your administrator's going in, they're trying to get run orders, they're trying to set up a whole bunch of stuff for the day, so it's easier to set that dead period you're talking about, and then just accept day of if that's easier. But for some people, if they don't have the day of volunteers, it might be easier to accept the entries.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. And the other thing, too, about the day of entries is that there's a specific period of time where those are made available. So it's usually half an hour before check-in.
Right.
You can do a day of entry. And there's, like, just this really narrow window where it's a really controlled number of entries. If you allow eight entries if you allow late entries,
yeah.
What can happen is you could get 20 people entering Thursday night for your Friday morning.
Right.
And that's a nightmare for a trial secretary. Yeah. So generally, you know, I personally will have my entry deadline, my cutoff point. I don't take late entries, but you show up half an hour before registration, I'll take a day off.
Yeah.
Okay. If I have them available. Other places don't bother to close their entries until the day before, and there is no late entry because it's all there. You go. They're supposed to close them, I think, a week ahead of the event. But they just leave them open because they take late entries, and they might not penalize you for that. Like, there's no fee for late entries. And that just depends. If it's a fly by the seat of their pants kind of secretary, and that's how they like to run their trial, great. As long as, like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But for me as a secretary, that would be just an exhausting nightmare to have, like, 2 a.m. entries roll in the day before the trial, and I've got all my scribe sheets printed out and everything in order and paper clipped and in pouches and everything, and then all of a sudden I have a whole whack of entries. I'm not going to be a happy camper. So and then I sit there day of crossing my fingers that nobody comes and enters. Ruins my run order. Because you know it'll be like one person handling five dogs, so you have to distribute them all in the same class. So you suddenly need to add three extra blinds and scatter all of your
previously perfect order.
Exactly. Refunds. I guess we should talk about refunds because sometimes people enter and then they realize they want to go do this other thing that weekend instead. Like, maybe they got into another show that they were waitlisted for. Maybe somebody decided to get married, so they have to go to a wedding. Or maybe there's a
last minute work change, whatever.
Yeah, work change, or you know, something fun or something not fun that all of a sudden they have to do. Their dog is injured in some way, or there's a snowstorm coming in, or an avalanche has closed the road to Golden and nobody can get there, kind of thing. So definitely, like, refunds. This one says competitors who withdraw any or all entries from a fun test trial or trials, so events, prior to pre-entry closing date, so the cutoff time for closing date, must receive a refund of all entry fees minus any non-refundable credit card / PayPal transaction fees, so banking fees.
It also doesn't mention any donations. Sometimes the clubs will allow a donation, so
that's true. That would be tacky, asking for your donation. Yeah. I gave you guys $10, but now I want to go buy a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
So
I'm taking it back.
I need my $10 back.
Yeah.
So basically, the reason there is a cutoff date for entries is not just to stop entries from coming in for the secretary, but it's also to kind of have this, like, gray period of I can enter. So say I enter a trial in October, which I did.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, one of my coworkers who's supposed to work that Saturday has a death in the family and has to fly somewhere and can't work that Saturday, and my work is like, we really need somebody to come in on Saturday. Up until the cutoff time, I can say to the trial secretary, hey, I really wanted to come to this event, but it looks like I have to work. Gonna need my money back. And she has to give it back. Like, the club has to refund it. However, if I enter on, say, well, if I paid by PayPal, for example,
yeah,
the club may have been charged a fee from PayPal to process my payment.
Yeah.
So that's money that has gone to a third party.
Yeah.
I'm not entitled to that back. I paid that to PayPal.
Yeah.
If I have a problem with it, I can take it up with PayPal.
Yeah.
But or a banking fee, like say I had to pay $5 to send the e-transfer. I can't demand the club give me my entry fee plus my $5 for the e-transfer back. And if I want my money back via e-transfer and it costs the club $5 to send it to me,
yeah,
they don't have to give me, that's a processing fee for the refund. Therefore, I'm not entitled to that back. So they might send me $15 back instead of $20.
Yeah.
But they do have to give me the amount that is my run fee. They have to give that back. However, if the trial closes, usually it's closed a week in advance of the trial. If it closes, entry's closed. And then like 2 days before the trial, I go, oh, I've just been invited skiing and I want to go skiing.
Yeah.
I don't get my money back.
Yeah.
If the secretary really likes me, she might give it back.
Yeah.
That
last minute deal to Mexico, you just are going to lose out on your...
Exactly. Walk away from your
$20. Yeah.
or if all of a sudden I need to be back at work in the afternoon so I can only play in the morning trial,
yeah,
I'm not entitled to that money back. It is up to the club at that point what they want to refund after the closing date. So a club can say no refunds for any reason. They can even say no refunds for,
heaven forbid, your dog passes away,
exactly,
or gets injured in a car accident.
And I don't know any club who wouldn't refund in the case of an injury, an illness, or whatever. However, it's perfectly fair for a club to say, okay, but we need a vet letter.
Yeah.
And it's very standard. I used to work in the dog, not the veterinary industry, but the dog medical industry.
Yeah.
And it was very common. We had a template and everything for X dog is unable to compete on X date due to X injury,
like
which we have been treating for X number of weeks.
Right.
And then you send that off to the trial secretary if their premium says, you know, refunds with a veterinary letter, because your dog needed a surgery or they've gone lame or whatever.
Yeah.
And those clubs might offer something like, you know, maybe they'll offer a 75 or a 50% refund, or there might be a wait list, so they could potentially sell your run to somebody else, in which case they may be willing to give you a full refund, or they may still only give you a partial refund,
or none at all.
Or they can kind of do what they want. The one thing a club can't do is sell a run that hasn't been relinquished. So if you if you just don't show up for check-in, they can't just be like, well, we can sell this run and then we get paid for two runs.
Right.
But we're only running one because, well, first of all, they have to pay Barn Hunt for every run that they submit. They pay the association, but you know they can't double sell a run.
Yeah.
It's the dog scratches, but the run itself hasn't actually been sold. There was a situation for me where I was on a wait list. Like, I got into the morning trial, but I didn't get into the afternoon trial.
Right.
I was on a wait list, and a dog was injured at the event.
Oh.
The owner pulled. And then we went to the secretary, and we were in the same class and everything, and I took the dog's run.
Yeah.
But that was before that trial started. So had it happened in like the middle of the day, like in the middle of the morning before that dog ran, and I wasn't entered in the morning and I wanted to play in the morning, it would have been too late.
Yeah.
But in that period of time between morning trial and afternoon trial where you do all your move ups and your lateral moves and stuff, I was able to essentially do a day of show entry with my dog who was already entered in the morning,
take that spot,
took the afternoon spot. So that was,
I would say,
I don't want to say lucky because the other dog is hurt. He's fine now, but
I mean, I would say usually the secretaries want to help you, so you can't count on it, but generally they try to help you out.
Yeah. Secretaries want to be flexible. They're not just there to take your money and walk away. Like, it's way too much work for what a secretary actually, you know, benefits from, or what their club benefits from, like running trials is exhausting. So they're not just out there to keep your PayPal fees.
Yeah, no.
Which
they don't get anyway.
So that's refunds. Eligible dogs. Eligible dogs in barn hunt. Females in season. Yes, they are allowed. Not all sports allow them. There are rules for females in season. They must be wearing panties in the blind and in the ring. And anytime they're out of their crating area, except to be pottied, I believe. Oh, yes, it says right there. Bitches in season must wear their panties at all times when out of their crates, except when being pottied.
Yeah.
They're provided with a separate crating area, which is marked.
Okay.
And they are provided with a separate potty area. So if you have a bitch in season, you tell the trial secretary and they'll get you all set up with like where you need to be, and they will arrange it so that bitch in season runs last in their class where possible. Some dogs who are more distracted by bitches in season than others, and I would say that probably, like, from the standpoint of barn hunt, the idea is that every dog in the blind should be as on as even a playing field as every other dog in their class. So that means not doing things like turning fans on and off between blinds and stuff like that. So everything should be kept as same as possible. And if you run a bitch in season in one blind and not in every other blind,
right,
then you could say that the venue or the course was not kept the same for all dogs because there was a bitch in season in one blind and not in the other.
I don't think this is a rule concern, but you kind of were talking about they don't show your bitch if she doesn't want to work.
Yeah.
But I'd say any dog, if you see that they're stressed out or not to enjoy it, don't. Yeah. That's going to apply.
There is actually, it's written in the rules.
Oh, it is. Yeah. There you go.
You may at any time look at the judge and say, I would like to leave the ring.
Yeah.
At any time, you can end your run. I have a dog who gets incredibly ring shy, and we've tried several sports now, and we did SDDA scent detection, and we signed up for six runs, and I asked the judge to stop my run so we could leave four times. I NQ'd us once because I panicked and called the wrong container.
Yeah.
It was the one beside me. Excuse you. And we qualified one interior. Yeah. But yeah, and what really was upsetting to me, how surprised the judge looked when I looked at him. I probably still had 4 minutes left in my 5 minute run.
Yeah.
And my dog was melting down into like a little heap of really quiet panic. Because he was afraid of the tractors where the hide was hidden. And so he's afraid of the tractors, and I know he's afraid of tractors.
Yeah.
But that's luck of the draw, right? It wasn't on a car, it was on a tractor. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So freaking him out. And I looked at the judge and I said, no, he's done. We're gonna stop. And he gives me this look like, pardon me.
Yeah.
And it's allowed. It is not poor sportsmanship. There's a rule on the score sheet for SCDA that says if the dog is showing like undue signs of stress, like if they are so stressed in the ring, they can actually be like disqualified or given a non-qualifying run.
Yeah.
Because they're like a zero score or whatever it is. It's a no pass if your dog is so freaked out in the ring that they're under distress. In my opinion, my dog was under distress, and I called it before a judge had to. But apparently, a lot of people need this like really pointed out to them. And I like that it's written in the rule book. You can end your run at any time. If at any time you feel like your dog is behaving poorly, or your dog is afraid, or something is going wrong, maybe you can tell your dog is about to have explosive diarrhea.
Yeah.
you can turn to the judge and say, we'd like to leave the ring.
I haven't done that one, actually. It's not explosive diarrhea, but Tess has gone. I can tell she's about to poop in the ring, and it's just like, nope, leash, nope, we're getting out of there.
We gotta go, we gotta go. And that's not, it's not bad sportsmanship. If anything, it's the opposite,
yeah,
right? Respectfully ask the judge if you could, I need to end my run.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance.
Yeah.
But we're going to leave the ring. And I have said to a judge too, running my scared boy in barn hunt, I have said, I have picked him up, 50 pounds of dog. I picked him up off the top of the tunnel and said, we're just going to go.
Yeah.
he needs a hug.
Yeah.
He needs to go back to the car. He needs to, you know, because he's scared of people watching him over the fence. I don't know. But he's not happy. So we're going to stop. And so, yeah, if you have, you know, your bitchin' season in there fussing with her panties, instead of yelling at her, just stop your run. Go deal with that. Bring her back when she's not in season. You know, it's just one run. It's not the end of your barn hunt career.
Yeah.
If she can't work in pants.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not the end of everything if, you know, your dog's got the squirts because he didn't travel well or something. You know, you take it as ring experience and you end it on a positive note before you're upsetting your dog, before you're upsetting yourself, before you're wrecking the course for everybody else. It's better sportsmanship to just know when to quit.
Yeah.
And that includes if your dog is completely blowing you off and you know it's just bad training, like they're practicing a bad habit. Maybe they're giving you a black eye instead of doing the tunnel and you're getting upset with them. That's not what the game's about. So just, you're allowed to leave at any, you're not stuck in there for the duration of your time. You're not imprisoned.
Yeah.
So you can leave. You're allowed.
Exercise your own free will at any point should you feel necessary.
Yeah. Right. So bitches and season are allowed to play responsibly. They gotta wear pants. Okay. Deaf dogs, complete or partial hearing loss, not considered a problem for barn hunt. That's allowed. Dogs with limited or partial vision, that includes dogs missing or blind in one eye, as well as dogs with partial vision in one or both eyes. So a dog with cataracts, but who can still navigate freely. Yeah, that's fine. I call them winky dogs, one-eyed dogs. So I look like they're winking at you.
Yeah.
Those are allowed. One thing that I, as a trainer, will mention, however, if your dog has recently lost that eye or has recently had their vision impaired from full to partial vision suddenly, my personal recommendation would be that you spend a couple of months, 6 months, 8 months, just with your dog learning how the world looks now.
Yeah.
Before going into a competition and having them walking off edges of bales and stuff, because they actually, their brain has to learn how to re-see. This is a neuroscience brain development issue at this point. It's not just about the eyes.
Yeah.
So if your dog has recently lost an eye or recently gone blind in one eye really suddenly, so not like a gradual loss of vision, my recommendation would be that you take 6 to 8 months for your dog to relearn how to jump into the car without slamming their head into their crate and, you know, things like that, because you put them in an unstable, unfamiliar situation where they're thinking about rats and they're thinking about going really fast and they're doing all those other things. Their vision's not, their brain hasn't learned how to deal with the lack of input from that eye anymore. And you don't want to injure them in another way.
No.
Just by, so take your time coming back from an injury like that, because there's a lot more going on than just having the stitches out from having the eyelid sewn shut.
Yeah.
So, So take your time.
Yeah.
Dogs with missing or partial limbs, kind of the same thing. So dog missing a limb or with a short withered limb are not automatically to be considered lame and are eligible to compete as long as they can negotiate the course safely and without showing signs of pain. That is going to be up to the judge's discretion. One judge might look at your dog and say, nope, that's fine. And another judge might look at it and go, I don't want that in my ring, you know, because it doesn't make them feel safe, right?
And if you don't think it's safe, don't bring your dog.
True.
So don't leave it up to the judge totally to decide. Obviously, if you see your dog's in pain or limping, Stay home that day.
Yeah, yeah. And it also says here, dogs must be sound on the number of limbs they have, which are capable of being used. So if you have a three-legged dog, but they're a little limpy in the shoulder because they're taking all that weight because they're sore that day, and this happens to dogs who are missing a hind leg, or one front leg's missing, and they kind of put all that extra pressure on that other leg, they can actually get sore in the remaining limb. So they're not being, in this case, they're not being excused from competition because they have three legs. They're being excused from competition because the leg that they have is sore.
Yeah.
Right? So that brings us to dogs who are ineligible, so not allowed to compete in barn hunt.
Thank you, and thank you to Monica for helping us with that first episode of Fumbling Through the Rulebook, and that's part one of our barn hunt series. So please do stay tuned for the next episode covering barn hunt and then future episodes down the road. Thanks for tuning in.
Large is 18 inches and higher, so it's 17.9. I guess, because it's not metric.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it's in inches. So whatever the equivalent of,
don't ask Canadian.
That is.
Yeah.
Can you do inches? I don't know. Decimals. It doesn't seem compatible with imperial.
I guess it'd be 0.11 or something.
Point 0.11.
Isn't it?
And 11/12.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we get this in centimeters?
Bennett.
All gone. No more.
No more. I'm done.
All gone.